We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
This is Behind the Badgers podcast presented by U.S. Cellular. I have trouble with that word. Brian Mason is with me. I'm Patrick Herb. And this is part two of our conversation with Bo Ryan, the member of the UW Athletics Hall of Fame class of 2020. His stories are legendary. We had him retell several on this and found some new stuff. I learned a couple things from our conversation with him. And thanks for checking this out today. If you have not listened to part one, I would recommend stopping, going back, listening to last week's podcast first, set the tone, then come back and listen to this one. They're highly entertaining, or at least I think so. One thing we could talk about before we get it back into Bo conversation is the Big Ten Network came out with their all-decade team for football. A couple weeks ago, we talked about the basketball team, and Frank Kaminsky and Ethan Happ were named first and second teamers respectively. And we talked about some snubs that we thought. The football team came out. Lots of Badgers were named in there. Also some Badger snubs, I'd say. Brian, what's your takeaway from the football, Big Ten Network's football all-decade team?
Trying to narrow down this past decade's worth of, I think, especially looking at this through a Wisconsin lens, trying to narrow down the Big Ten's running back class to two selections was challenging. I think everybody that was involved in the process would say, and I think fans of at least two programs have their gripes. I mean, Jonathan Taylor was one of the two selections at running back. No brainer. One of the best careers in college football history. Saquon Barkley was the other. And we all saw him play. No question. Just a tremendous talent, tremendous player. Ohio State fans had their complaints specifically about Ezekiel Elliott not being part of that list. I don't know how you can look back on the last 10 years of football in the Big Ten and not have Melvin Gordon and Monte Ball on your all-decade team. I mean, from a historical perspective and what they did, unbelievable.
How about this? If I would have told you, it sounds like a 30 for 30 intro. If I would have told you in 2018 that Wisconsin will have a running back on the all-decade team, and it's not going to be Monte Ball or Melvin Gordon. Just think about that. Think about what in your head, like in 2018, you said, seriously, we got another guy coming that's going to be better than those two?
Well, in 2018, JT had already broken Adrian Peterson's freshman rushing record the
summer
year before.
Let's say
2016. If you'd asked me this in 2016 right before JT got here, yeah, absolutely. I'd say there's no way Melvin Gordon and Monte Ball
embarrassment
could not be
of riches. Embarrassment right? of riches.
But then that bleeds over into offensive line, too. I mean, they ended up putting six players on the offensive line because of ties in the voting. And I mean, Wisconsin had 12 first-team All-Americans that played offensive line during this decade. 12 different first-team All-Americans in a 10-year span, and only one of them made the team. And that
were you surprised? Were you surprised that Michael Dieter was the one that they picked for first team?
Probably, because I think if you were drafting a team, you know, drafting linemen, saying who would literally were the best, I'm not sure Dieter would be the best that has come through here. Certainly one of the best personalities. And
and great player. I mean, he played tackle, guard, center, started 54 games, UW record.
I have
Wisconsin's record in the games that he started. 42-12.
Right. No, it's silly. I mean, he did it all. He was great. He was the Big Ten offensive lineman of the year as a senior. And he was the first guy in basically 20 years to win that award while playing guard. So he was special, no question. But you can go back and look at, you know, Gabe Karimi and Kevin Zeitler both ended up making the second team all decade. Gabe Karimi was the Outland Trophy winner. Kevin Zeitler was a first round pick. I mean, they were both just tremendous players. Travis Frederick, Ryan Ramczyk. You can keep going on the list of guys that were snubbed from the list at offensive line, because I think we, you and me and everybody listening to this podcast, would have no problem building a starting five offensive line for that all decade team that were all Badgers. So, it's sort of like the basketball team. I don't have a lot of complaints with who made the team, but it's hard to argue that there shouldn't be more Badgers, especially at running back and offensive line, the sort of two prestige positions for this program.
Defensive side of the ball. Yeah. Chris Borland was named first team all decade at linebacker.
I was glad there was no, like, the recency bias didn't kick in there, that people remembered just how
he was a
great
changer.
Player. Yeah. Chris Borland was in the early part of the decade. I mean, just tremendous. So he was the linebacker selection for Wisconsin. TJ Watt was a second team pick at outside linebacker and super deserving of that. But again, the Badgers had five first team All-America linebackers in the decade. So plenty of room you could think to have more, but it was a fun exercise.
Who else should have been in the conversation that wasn't?
In terms of,
we talked about this a little bit a couple weeks ago, but just players that deserved a sniff.
Sure. I mean, Jared Aberderis was the Badgers' other second team pick at wide receiver. And so that he was the obvious choice at wide receiver. We covered the running backs. We covered the offensive line. I mean, tight ends.
Had Russell Wilson played more than one season, he'd have been in the mix.
For
certainly.
Sure. Yeah. Yep.
J.J. Watt. If J.J. Watt had played more than one season in the decade.
But he made the team. But he was a pick at defensive end. No, he was first team. He was on the all decade team. So
I got to talk to my research guy here.
like we said the last thing, he's J.J. Watt. So of course he's gonna make that team.
Do you think that names influence this team some as well? I mean, it's a voting panel, so that I'm sure it was on the up and up. But do you think that because J.J. played only one season, was he one of the best defensive end? Because do you think name recognition?
Certainly. Well, that and is what he did in the NFL, or what he has done in the NFL over the 10 years that have followed. I mean, he's been 3-time NFL Defensive Player of the Year. So I think all that certainly factors into legacy.
And he hosts Ultimate Tag.
He does. Yes.
Yeah. So two of the three Ultimate Tag hosts are on the Big Ten Network All Decade Team.
Derek, the forgotten man once again. So it's really too bad there was not a fullback category specific, because I think Wisconsin could have done very well with fullbacks between Derek Watt and Alec Ingold and Brady Ewing. It was a strong decade for fullbacks for the Badgers as well.
Fullback U. So we're RBU, LBU, and FBU right now.
And O-line U. Don't forget O-line U. I mean, NFL.com.
It doesn't have a B in it, so I couldn't.
Sure. NFL.com last week named Wisconsin O-line U for having the best production among its alums playing in the NFL. So
yeah, we only got one first team all decade, and Ohio State got two. All right,
but we had a lot of guys go get paid and make a lot of plays in the NFL too. So I think they're probably okay. They're feeling good about things.
Very true. All right, let's get to a guy who. So Bo Ryan was not the coach of the decade for the basketball. Tom Izzo was, but you could have made a pretty strong argument for Bo Ryan and what he did in the decade of the 2010s. There were a lot of good candidates for basketball, but Bo Ryan would have been. I'm sure there was some healthy debate about where his place was within the decade. But let's go back and dive into our story hour with Bo Ryan right after this. It has been difficult to stay connected over the last few months. Whether it's shelter in place or we haven't gone to work in our facilities in months. And so Brian and I haven't seen each other face to face other than Zoom calls in so long. But US Cellular is really trying to help us stay connected as much as they can. And so they've been waiving data overage charges for months now, and they're still doing it through the entire month of July. No matter what plan you're on, if you're a US Cellular customer, you've got the smartphone data you need and you won't be charged for overages. So even if we have to be apart, we have to do this distancing thing, and we do, believe me, it's important, especially if we want to have fall sports. We need to social distance. We need to wear masks. We need to be US Cellular subscribers because they are helping us stay in touch.
All right. Well, without further ado, part two of our extremely entertaining conversation with Bo Ryan. When we talk about recruiting, we always talk about fit and finding the fit. Was that part of the challenge of finding guys who were, you know, how can you know when you're recruiting that a guy is going to buy into playing defense, is going to buy into the way you want to do things? That seems like a pretty big challenge.
Because they want to play. And if you're going to be playing, you got to play defense. So that was never a problem. That was never an issue for us. You either do or you don't. And if you don't, you're not on the court. And these guys are competitive. But people always go, oh, they recruited guys to their system. Okay. A system. Is winning a system? Is being good rebounders, blocking out, diving for loose balls, playing hard all the time. When you do your press conferences, and it's not about you. It's about the team. And it's about mentioning that the other team is really good. We were fortunate to beat them. Be humble. You know, guys like that, you can tell when you're watching them in high school how they react to the officials, how they react to their teammates, how they, you know, all those things you're processing. And, you know, you have to recruit a large list because you know a lot of people are going to decide on somewhere else because there's a place for everyone in their place. And fortunately, we found enough guys that wanted to be in our place.
As a competitor, which I think you are well known to be a competitor, what sticks out more, the wins or the losses? Because I think to a lot of competitors, they'll never forget, they'll pile up the wins, but it's those losses that eat at them. Do you find yourself having more vivid memories of losses than wins? Albeit, there were few. There weren't many. I'll couch that. But do you find
you are Dr. Evil. Because when you're 24-1 in high school, do you think for one second anybody has ever asked me, well, who were the 24 wins against?
Right.
So early on in my playing days, and then leading into coaching tenure, we were fortunate to have coached two undefeated teams, so I didn't have to answer that question those 2 years in 95 and 98, but who's counting? What sticks out more? I would have said until that last run that we made to the championship game, that 48 hours was the best and the worst. The best being the win against Kentucky and knowing what that meant to people.
Yep.
And to see what happened to my players. I hope my players don't say that they felt they didn't get the better end of the calls, but there is no question in my mind that game changed. And when you say what sticks out the most, if all the people that I've heard from in the last 5 years were at that game, there's no way in the world the city of Indianapolis could have held all the people who mentioned that they were at the game and what happened and what they felt happened. But, you know, I can honestly say that there is more joy to the accomplishments than there ever will be to the setbacks, because you still have to rewind and go, why are we playing this game? Why are you coaching this game? The experience, the camaraderie, the friendships, a place to put that energy that we all have inside, put it somewhere positive. Compete, shake hands afterwards. I don't think they'll be shaking hands anymore if we're playing. But anyhow, the sport of basketball and what it does to the individuals that play it, to have them become a part of the team and what that takes, is something to behold that in my 43 years of doing it, junior high, high school, college, it's much more about the joy than it is about the sorrow.
I'm glad to hear you say that. I'm glad you have healthy perspective. That's good. I'm also glad to hear you say that you're not over the 2015 national championship game, because I'm not over it either.
No, this is good. This is
cathartic. This is. You mentioned all the people in Indianapolis who said they were at the game. I think they were all at our hotel the two nights prior to the national championship game.
That was so,
what do you remember from that?
Goosebumps. I couldn't. First of all, I thought they were giving away something when we got back to the. Oh, what is there, some kind of giveaway here? You could not. I think it was Duryea that mentioned if he dropped his cell phone, there's no way it could ever miss somebody.
Yeah, it wouldn't hit the floor.
To be up on that balcony, the people that were down below had no idea what it looked like from up where we were. Because I don't know how many pockets might have been picked during that time.
Social distancing did not apply. Let's put it that way.
No. That was one wave, giant wave, tidal wave of humanity that was so positive and so excited. And it just, it was brought tears to my eyes. And the thing is, we had the later game. We got to get those guys fed. We got to get rest. And then, you know, we got practice the next day on Sunday, and, you know, we were squeezed a little bit that way, but you know what? It's a fun issue to have to deal with. And our players truly appreciated the energy that was in the building.
I think my room was on the 7th floor of the hotel, and we could hear the lobby from my hotel. Because after the game, we got back and I went to check on my kids who were in bed. They didn't go to the game. We're up there and it's quiet.
Tyler and Austin?
Yeah. They're now 7 and 10, but they were 5 years ago. They were 5 and 2 at the time. We could hear the lobby from our 7th floor hotel room.
Really? That's pretty loud. And the Wisconsin people aren't known to become dehydrated. I think it was a pretty good business taking place by the hotel. I think there were a couple dollars made by somebody somewhere. What do you think?
The next day, that Sunday, is what I always remember from that weekend. It's just the way, I mean, you talk about there's more people than could fit in Indianapolis that claim they were at that game. I think they were all in town on Sunday when, like, the whole state of Wisconsin seemed to flood the borders and take over Indianapolis. Yeah, that's one thing that'll always stand out to me.
It's funny you say that. There are people who drove down after that game, either left that night and then tried to get tickets,
yep,
or just left Sunday morning and said, hey, let's go spend the day in Indianapolis. You're right. I've run into a lot of those people that fit that category. And then they either got a ticket, or if they didn't, they just drove back Monday and then watched the game on TV.
Yeah, it was unreal.
Let's stay on that season, the 2014-15 season. Are you familiar with the term Operation Pineapple?
Operation Pineapple. I am not.
Okay. So There, when we played at Maryland late in the season, we went to Maryland with a chance to win to clinch the Big Ten championship.
Right.
We still had two games remaining.
We threw it at home.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, that's right. So we had to make a decision. The administration put this on Justin Doherty, that we had to decide, do you want to have the trophy, the Big Ten championship trophy, with you at Maryland in case you win, so you can have a celebration in the locker room? Do you know that we had the trophy with us in the locker room that day?
No idea.
Okay, we did. And it was this cloak and dagger, like Ocean's 11 routine to get the trophy smuggled onto our plane, smuggled onto our bus, in the hotel, into the arena, and have it there in case we won. Because we knew you would not want to know that that trophy was in the building. Then we lose the game, and we're like, oh, man, we got to make sure. Now we definitely have to make sure he doesn't know that it's in the building. So we got to smuggle it back out, get it back to Madison so that we could celebrate next weekend when we beat Michigan State. So you knew nothing about that?
I knew nothing. And I'm kind of glad that I didn't. Because I really
– You would not have wanted it there, right? Or at least you would not have known that it was there?
Just doing that with the team with a piece of hardware – really would not have meant anything to me as a coach, as an individual. I'm just speaking for myself. But to have it done in front of our loyal fans and our people, our faculty members that were in there, for the school to be able to do it at home, pretty special. And I've never liked the idea of celebrating on somebody else's territory, if you know what I mean.
It all worked out. It all worked out very nicely. So,
well, there were a lot of smiles after that Michigan State game, yes.
Besides, let's set aside the Kentucky win because we've already covered that. But in your 43 years of enjoying the wins, what's one you're never going to forget? What's a win that will always be toward the top of the list for you?
Let's go Badger era.
Yeah.
Badger era.
Yeah. And non-Final Four category here.
A timeout. We call play number one. The three-man runs to the corner, to the opposite corner. The point guard comes off a high ball screen off the lane line. The big picks and rolls to the rim. Later on with the Bergrins and Butches and Kaminskis and those guys, we could either pick and pop or pick and roll. So in this case, it was a pick and roll. So the one man with the ball had a chance to make a play, knowing that he was going to draw some defensive attention. So the player that ran to the corner set his feet, set his shoulders. The point guard comes off the ball screen. Sure enough, the guy guarding the guy in the opposite corner comes all the way to the lane line to give help against a pretty good point guard. The point guard fires to the corner, just like in the shooting drills, and hits nothing but net. 2003, we're down against Tulsa 13 with what? Minute 50, something like that.
Yeah.
And we win that ball game to go to the Sweet 16. So that was 2003. Devin Harris to Freddie Owens to bottom of the net.
I always thought that said a lot about Devin. That he was willing to give it up in that moment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he could have pulled up and taken a jump shot.
Right.
But, you know, we were down two, I believe, and that put us up one with like a second to go on the clock. So we kind of felt as long as we don't foul, we got this one. But I would say that right there was a game that just it seemed like we had no chance. Things were not going well. Tulsa was very athletic, and defensively they were beating us to spots. They were a very good team. They had knocked off Dayton two nights before. So that one I will never forget.
Okay, NCAA tournament category, down big, felt like we just wasn't our night. What do you remember about the Oregon game at the Bradley Center in 2014? That's another one that every Badger fan in the world, I think, claims they were there.
Yeah. Yes. Here's how I know that had to have been a very special game. We ended up sometime during the course of the post game and then getting ready for the next game. You have to quick get dressed, get showered, media, boom, back to Madison. Every usher, every worker in that building that we ran into, and there's a lot because they have a lot of security. They have a lot of people. You know, they do a very good job. And coach, we thought there was a riot. We thought something really bad had happened. And then we thought something really good happened. And I said, what do you mean? They said, we felt the walls out here vibrating. And the noise, we've never, for a Bucks game, a Marquette game, anybody, they said, we have never felt this building like that or ever heard this building like that. That must, because they couldn't watch the game. They were working security and or guarding the doors. So that game right there, I know, was something that was very special. And the crowd willed us. There was no way in the world the fans who were there were going to let us not win that game.
I got another thing I want to set the record straight on. So late in the first half, you got called for a technical foul in that game. And I think it would surprise people how few technical fouls you actually had in your career. But you did have one at the end of that. And Dana Altman, the coach of Oregon, said in a halftime interview that he thought you were inciting the crowd a little bit and doing some theatrics. Did you try to get the technical foul, or was that just, it just happened? It's just truth time.
Well, really, I suggested a restaurant to that official, and he didn't like it. So I kind of got a little, you know, upset with him. Sometimes when there's a technical, it's because if I'm frustrated with something and if I think that there might be something getting away from us, there is a time to take one. But if you'll notice, never did any technical that I ever had, and you're right, I didn't have that many, ever affected the outcome of the game. Never under 5 minutes, never under 8 minutes. But if you go down and take a look at the time on the sheets of when the technical was taken, our record's pretty good on any time that yours truly got a technical.
That's a good, we need a listener.
I didn't do it on purpose to excite. I mean, you know, it'd be a great story. No, but.
Yeah, you could take credit for it.
Well, maybe I wanted to get my players.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, more so than the crowd. If a coach is worrying about the crowd, he's worrying about the wrong thing. But to have the help of the audience is like any other performer. You know, when I would go see the Temptations or the Four Tops or whatever, and, you know, if the people clapped at the end of each song, the louder they clapped, the better the group felt. So, you know, once we started giving the fans a reason to clap and started playing better, people responded. So, no, I did not do it for the fans. I probably did it in retrospect more for the players. Wake up.
Yeah, I always said that's the loudest building I've ever been in was that game. It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, so now I'm going to be Dr. Evil. I'm going to flip it around. Is there a loss that you'll never forget, that always sticks with you?
Well, a lot of losses come into focus here, or they come into the picture, but how focused are they? I'm not sure. Maybe sometimes you go, the most disappointing would be when I would have felt that my players didn't play hard, or at the end of a game, maybe we were down and they kind of said, oh, well, we're not going to win this one. But I can tell you this. I cannot remember a game when you say about a loss that maybe sticks out more. The only way a loss would stick out to me is if my guys stop playing. And I've watched interviews, and you guys know I have a record of never, ever, ever in a press conference criticizing a player or saying, we didn't come ready to play, or this guy didn't do this. Or no, it was a team effort, the staff, the players. If we took a bump, we took a bump. But it's I've never had a team quit on me. I can honestly say that, and maybe that's because I'm ornery.
What? Or,
because they know I wouldn't accept that, but I want it to be because they wouldn't accept that, not what the coach would accept or not. So one loss does not stick out like that.
So we had Frank Kaminsky on the podcast a couple weeks ago, and he talked about that 2014-15 era. And he was there 2 years prior to Nigel Hayes, and he was there 2 years with Nigel Hayes. He theorizes that they changed you as a group. They changed you as a coach a little bit. Yeah. What's your reaction to that? Do you think that you might have changed a little bit because of that group and maybe Nigel in particular, but the whole group, the Josh and Sam and the whole group?
No, here's what I can tell you that I'm hoping that there are teachers out there and coaches. I remember a class I had in education when I was getting certified to teach social science, meaning economics, history, geography, in order to be a junior high and high school coach. And there was a teacher that made a statement that, you know, what's really cool, what's really neat, is when you listen to your students talk about how they came up with the right answer and how they did this and how they did that. And meanwhile, you're standing there and you know that you were a part of disseminating that information to them. This gentleman said, the biggest smile you're going to get in coaching and teaching is when you have your students believe that they figured it out. It's the best. You didn't figure it out for them. They figured it out. And if you listen to Frank talk, Frank will tell you he figured it out. And that's okay. It's, you know, he figured things out based on things that he was experiencing. So when knowledge takes place in a classroom or on the basketball court, to feel inside that you're the one that, that aha moment, oh yeah, now I've got it. Then what you do is the next generation, for his kids, for his children, that hopefully he has some, if that's his desire, that as a parent, you're going to pass things on. And then when you see your children doing things and you go, they feel pretty good about that, and they should. And they feel that they came to those conclusions. They came to that. So that, to me, when Frank talks about change and all that, well, we had an experienced team. Those guys figured out a lot on their own, and it wasn't when they were playing their video games. It was their interactions with each other, and it was quite the blend of how they learned to play off of one another, with one another, and the chemistry couldn't have been any better. Nigel, one time I came in for a scouting report, and Nigel and he does this at times, he'll just say something, and he goes, "Hi, Pops, what do we got today?" And the guys, I guess, were wondering, well, how's Coach Ryan gonna? I had no problem with that. Because when it's time to flick the clips on and we're taking notes, now we're listening, now we're paying attention, and those guys could do that. They could separate the two. No group that I've ever had could do that as well as that group.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's one of the things that made them so endearing too, and why people loved them so much, because they were self-aware goofballs, but they were ruthless. They were ruthless on the court. I mean, they were just surgical. But then off the court, they didn't take themselves seriously at all.
Well, and you asked me before about guys that overcame lack of or like who developed the most. And I mentioned Michael Flowers because everybody knows more about what's happened in the past 5-6 years, right? I mean, I like to throw names out there sometimes that maybe people forgot about or maybe have taken for granted. But right with Michael Flowers' name, when you just mentioned Josh Gosser, he wasn't being recruited that heavily. And that doesn't put down Northwestern as not being, but Northwestern was really our competition, as Josh has told me in years after. But how about what that young man did, starting as a freshman, and how far he came over his 4 years? And matter of fact, in the background with you there, I see some sneakers and a uniform, and yeah. Guess what? If I turn mine
Captain
like
Captain America,
this, if I'm gonna lift mine up here.
You got team photos? What do you got?
Oh, I got team photos behind me, but yep. I've got that picture of Josh.
Yes, the Sports Illustrated cover. You got a frame too. I like it.
You got a frame. Hopefully, I didn't mess up the zoom. Of course, when you said you're going to zoom, I thought we were going to do car racing. People know my lack of technology skills, I think.
So is that more of a strength of your son, Will? I mean, he's taking over as head coach at Green Bay, but he's doing it in the middle of this totally different world. I mean, I assume most of his interactions with his team so far have been over Zoom or something with the like.
Yes, and wow. Thanks for bringing that up, because as parents, Kelly and I, needless to say, are really excited for not just Will, but for his family. And
yeah, congrats to you, Coach. That's awesome.
When I say family, his wife and three boys, who are terrors, by the way, I don't think Green Bay knows what they're getting themselves in for with those three. When they get Lindsay would have some problems, I think, with them in school.
It'll be all virtual learning now.
So, and then I mentioned that I got the job, my first Division I job when I was 50, and Will's 41. So he's way ahead of the game in the Ryan family. But he paid his dues. It's been handled very well that you don't get a job based on maybe what one of your family members did. You have to earn the right to take the job, and he's paid his dues. And he's now like anything else. Now just go win. Just go develop the players. Go make them better. Go recruit. Go surround yourself with the best staff you can find. Get out in the community. Get to all the Rotary clubs, the Optimist clubs, any speaking engagements in town. I know he's going to do some work with Coaches Versus Cancer and cancer funding. That's been something that's been in our family for a long time. But what's nice is I'm going to get a chance to watch from a little different perspective. It was tough watching on the computer last year when he was at Wheeling, because he got the job late. The school wasn't even sure if they were going to be open. And again, pick for last. They ended up fifth out of 12. And that's what really helped them to kind of hit the finish line and get the job at Green Bay, what he did within 1 year at Wheeling.
We can claim him as a Badger. A lot of people don't know that probably, that he was a video coordinator and director of ops on your staff at Wisconsin for several years.
Because I could not hire him as an assistant.
Could he hire you as an assistant?
I don't know, but fat chance.
No, I mean, Palm, you have, Palm Springs. You have no interest in that? You have no interest in that?
Palm Springs winter, you know, greater than Green Bay winter.
Four iron on any golf course in Green Bay in January.
Do you think you'll attend many of his games, or would you be too nervous to go?
I think we've decided is we're going to make two trips back. You know, we are pretty entrenched in being in the warm weather for the winter.
Green Bay is supposed to play at Wisconsin this season. Can we see you at the Kohl Center for that game?
I can guarantee you I will be in one of the suites where nobody can see me.
Okay.
But because I don't want people getting my facial expressions, or because it's not about me or about Kelly. It's about Will, and it's about Gardo, and because he's worked with Gardo. He knows Greg really well. So, wow. Isn't life good when you can, if you're able to sit and watch a game with Greg Gard being the coach of one team and Will Ryan being the coach of the other? And who knows, maybe Western Illinois will get on Green Bay's schedule somewhere. Tennessee, Chattanooga. Maybe Tony will bring them down to Virginia for, you know, a good check, though. It's got to be some six or seven figures in there to give them a game. So, you know, those are going to be some fun times. They're going to be difficult times, but what job doesn't have its obstacles? So, because what we found out early in life is that the other guys are trying to win too, Patrick. Remember, you and I have had that conversation.
We've talked about that. Well, they measure legacy in a lot of ways, and we talk about legacy a lot with you because of what you've done. But having your son be a Division I head coach, having a lot of assistants, former players, you've got several former players who are Division I assistant or head coaches, and that's a big part of your legacy, and I know you're proud of it, and you should be, and so this is just another reflection of that. So we say congrats, and we want to say congrats again for the Hall of Fame class of 2020. That's much deserved, and now we've got to get you in that Naismith Hall of Fame, because that's one of the big errors of our time for basketball.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I have in my mind here, Patrick, when you mentioned about the Hall of Fame, there's other people going in. They have family. They have teammates. They have this, that. I don't know how, what decision Barry and the athletic department is going to come to. But, I would really hope that they could have it in a way that Mike Wilkinson's teammates could be there, Gibson's teammates, family there's other people who have, and with the way things are right now, I know it's got to be a tough decision for the athletic department.
Yeah.
But I would really hope that the inductees would have the opportunity to get people there and not to have restrictions and not to, but how that can be done in this day and age, I don't know, but that's just me offering up an opinion. So whatever happens, happens.
Oh, it's a Hall of Famer's opinion, so it should carry some weight.
I mean, we don't even know if the early football games will be played. Will there be people in the stands? These are unbelievable times.
But I'm with you. I'm ready for a big Hall of Fame party. I want as many people as we can. I want that for our athletic department, for you, for Mike, for Jesse Stomsky, Aaron Gibson, all the others to have that big party. I want that too. So, well, hey, Coach.
Yeah, Jesse could play. Yeah, you see, you weren't here when she played.
No,
she was good.
I imagine. I believe it.
And she was tough.
She could have played for you, huh? She could have played for you?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Coach, you've been generous with your time. Thank you so much. You gave us so many great stories, and I think you're going to have to be a recurring guest if you're okay with it.
I'm fine with that. This is if it helps the athletic department and keeps stories of players going on and out and about, giving them something to talk about, Maybe the next time I'll be a little more controversial so you get more
clicks. That's right. Sure. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know how your salary is. Does your salary depend on how many people watch your podcast?
Thankfully, no.
Okay, fair enough.
But we'll get Coach Ryan's hot takes on the next one. Sign us up. That'll be good.
Congrats, Coach. Take care of yourself. Stay safe during this pandemic, and give our best to Kelly.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. And you guys do the same.
Shouts to Bo Ryan. Man, he's a fun guy to talk to. He was such a character during his time in Madison at UW, and he gave me a lot of the gray hairs that I have in my head. I'm willing to admit that. He probably would admit that too. But he always treated me well, and we are thankful that he gave us as much time as he did today.
We probably could have gotten 2 hours if he didn't have a tea time to make, honestly.
he joked in part one about how there's no structure to his life anymore, and he's used to all this structure of practices and basketball now and retired. He's not. Yeah, right. He's got structure. He's got a tea time every day, probably about the same time. So he's scheduling his life around hustling people on the golf course.
Well, and I love that sort of revisionist history of, well, when I was a coach, everybody was always telling me what to do and when to be. Get out of here, man. We know who was setting the schedule.
That's right. And we wanted him setting the schedule. He was Hall of Famer for a reason, and we're grateful for the time. I was truthful that I think we need to have him back on. Maybe when, God willing, when Wisconsin and Green Bay play this fall in basketball, yeah, maybe we have him on either leading up to it or just coming out of it, either preview the game or afterwards react to the game, see what he saw.
Yeah, I wanted to ask him, we didn't get to it, like if he could break down a percentage on when he's watching the Badgers play, what percentage are you watching as fan? What percentage are you watching as coach? Like, I want to know where that falls for now with his son at Green Bay too. What percentage is dad watching the game? What percentage is Coach Ryan watching the game?
Absolutely. And I mean, there have been legendary stories of fathers who can't watch their son's games. I mean,
Dick Bennett
has been outspoken about how he can't watch Tony Bennett's games at Virginia. And so Bo Ryan probably won't be quite like that, but I bet it'll be agonizing for him to watch his son's games. I can only imagine what it would be like. So that's another idea. He probably wouldn't allow it, a camera on him during the Badgers Green Bay game to get all those facial reactions.
And a mic.
Yes.
Camera and a mic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He would never wear a mic during a game when he was a coach. So maybe he'll wear one now that he's not.
All right. That's something you can try to butter him up. See if we can get him there.
Thanks everybody for listening to Behind the Badgers podcast. We appreciate all the feedback. If you like this and you want to help us get it in front of other Badger fans, please share it with your friends, rate, review, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts, and drop us a note to let us know how we're doing. We got thick skin. I worked with Bo Ryan for a long time. I got thick skin. Let us know what you think. And if you have suggestions for who else we should have on the rest of this summer, and you can get us a couple different ways, Twitter @BehindBadgers, or email's a good one too, BehindTheBadgers@gmail.com. Brian, you got anything else? Do you have a good 4th of July?
It was good. It was good to do something that wasn't locked in the confines of my home. So, yep. Hope you did too.
No fire. Not fireworks were not what I, not the typical 4th of July, but I still enjoyed it. It was good. We had a good barbecue. Thanks, everybody. Hope you're staying safe during this pandemic. Please continue to follow the safety precautions that we need to. Football is right around the corner. We hope. With that in mind.
Let's all do our part, huh?
That's right. With that in mind, thanks for listening. Stay safe.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Badgers. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your preferred podcast platform. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.